the meeting of this Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners, calling to order at 8:30 a.m. on March 9th, 2022. Heather has already gone through people on the phone, so I don't think we need to repeat our roll call today. Just a reminder about the meeting being a professional meeting, treating each other with respect, and if anybody gets out of hand, then I have the authority to remove anyone from the meeting. Does anyone have any declaration of conflicts of interest? Okay, hearing none, then we will move on to our five, which are the items for board review, discussion, and possible action. The first investigation file that we will be discussing is complaint number 2022-C, which is Dr. Michael Dershowitz. Dr. Steck is our investigator on that. Is Ms. Kent present? I don't remember that we heard that Ms. Kent was on the line. It is counsel.
Hi, this is Kim Kent. I'm on the line.
Okay, thank you so much, Kim. All right.
Good morning, Dr. Campbell.
All righty. So we're going to go ahead. Dr. Dershowitz is not present, and the complainant is also not present. So we're going to go ahead and receive the report from Dr. Steck. Good morning, Dr. Steck.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Can everyone hear me okay? I when I'm listening to you, Dr. Campbell, it keeps cutting in and out.
Okay, I'll be careful with that. And yeah, you sound good from here. If just, you know, speaking slowly and clearly, and to remind everyone else on the call to mute your phones so that we don't get until we ask for anyone else to speak. So that way that keeps that background noise under control. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. This complaint is filed by the patient's father. He states his son had surgery in September of 2018 to help create an arch in his foot. He stated that the doctor needed to make an additional incision due to the patient's anatomy. The left foot, which was the first surgical foot, took a long time to heal and is still not healed. The patient had right foot surgery, the same type of surgery that he had on the left side, approximately 6 months later, and was healed and has done very well with that side, and was healed in approximately 4 months. The delay in healing prompted three other consultations by the patient's family in Washington, D.C., where they had moved. He saw two podiatrists and a nerve surgeon. The podiatrist stated the implant was inserted incorrectly and will need removal and reinsertion. Nerve surgeon told them there was nerve damage and that due to the delay in treatment, the success of the nerve repair was limited and guarded. The patient did undergo the nerve surgery, but to this day has continued hammer toes and severe pain in the left foot. They are upset they were not referred out for continued pain earlier. The Dr. Dershowitz's written response to the allegations states that the they did a significant medical record review, which I did as well. They did note at the time of surgery for the left foot there were abnormalities in the patient's anatomy. At the first post-op visit, numbness was attributed to the cast, and Dr. Dershowitz discussed with them about this unusual anatomy that he encountered during surgery. The patient continued to heal slowly, but even after 2 months after the left foot surgery, the family wanted to proceed with the same procedure on the right side. And on March 4th, again about 6 months after the first surgery, they elected to proceed with the right foot surgery, which healed uneventfully. Back to the left foot, the subsequent visits showed continued pain and developing hammer toes. This was explained to the patient as the body's adjustment to new alignment of the foot, and orthotics were prescribed. The patient then moved to Washington, D.C. They also, Dr. Dershowitz states that healing is individualized and that it is not unusual for hammer toes or other issues to develop. It is further stated that the doctor explained this to the patient and his parents in detail. The numbness that the patient experienced in their left foot was initially felt to be from the cast, and this was addressed. This was after the symptoms. The doctor felt that there may have been an injury from surgery, but exam ruled out transection. I do not see this in the record, however. The point also is made by Dr. Dershowitz that the patient returned for the right foot surgery, and if the left foot were disabling, it is highly unlikely they would return for the other foot. My medical record review, starting in way back in 2013 through about July of 2018, the patient was seen for conservative treatment, which seemed very appropriate. The patient was diagnosed with talocalcaneal subluxation of both feet. The visit on 7/17 of 18, the patient was continuing to have pain. Conservative treatment had been exhausted, and surgery was discussed. The patient was set up for surgery and not seen again until surgery. There was an extensive and appropriate informed consent obtained, which I can read in detail. On a physical exam on the 7/17/2018 visit, their vascular exam was stated to be normal, neuro was normal, and on the musculoskeletal exam, there was a planus foot type noted with moderate equinus and abnormal range of motion in the subtalar and mid-tarsal joints, but no specifics were given. X-rays at that time, the note says they were taken previously and were weight-bearing, but the X-rays that I saw were dated 7/17 of 18, and these were read as an increase in Kite's angle on the AP. The lateral showed superimposition of the navicular on the cuboid. As we'll discuss a little bit later, we'll go into more detail on those X-rays. In September of 2018, the surgery was performed on the left foot. This was a hypocure and a gastroc recession. No interesting note in the operative note was that there was extremely unusual anatomy, making the sinus tarsi difficult to palpate. An incision was made, but in the incorrect position. And the second incision was made more posterior to the first incision. It was commented on that the sinus tarsi was horizontal and not oblique. A number 5 device was the only size that would extend too far medially and would allow the stabilization of the talus on the calcaneus. At the first postoperative appointment, the patient was complaining of numbness, and conjecture was made that this was due to the cast. As I'll talk a little bit later, I don't see that exact wordage in the notes, however. Continuing on in November 1st of 2018, there was noted to be subjective improvement. On the physical exam, I do not appreciate a neuro exam was done, only physical exam findings. And these are consistent from note to note. These stated, quote, inspection of the surgical site reveals no signs of infection, mild edema, and the incision was healed, comma, bruising. On this November appointment, laser treatments were provided at no cost, presumably for nerve pain. in January of 2019. Again, subjectively, the patient continued to improve, and the patient discussed interest in proceeding with the same procedure on the right foot, which was subsequently done in March of 2019. This was the same procedure as the left side without complication. Patient was healed in about 4 months and has done very well with that side. In May of 2019, I believe this was the last time the patient was seen. On the right foot, the patient did well. Left foot, I did not see any specific subjective complaint, but reported as improving. The review of systems comments no neural findings. Objective had the same verbiage as I noted before. However, the laterality wasn't mentioned. Inspection of the surgical site reveals no signs of infection, mild edema, and incision healed, comma, bruising. And the plan that states that there is plantar dysesthesias on the left, and the laser treatment was continued. Patient then sought treatment as they moved to Washington, D.C., and then Dr. Dusick, D-U-C-I-C, was seeing the patient at the Washington Nerve Institute. We did obtain those records, and in August of 2019, the patient was seen for left foot pain, is noted to have numbness in the lateral plantar nerve distribution, medial plantar nerve hypersensitivity, and claw toes. The objective findings at that visit showed a strong tenel over the tarsal tunnel, medial plantar nerve hypersensitivity, lateral plantar nerve forefoot, and numb toes. And there was a painful scar at the mid-calf as well. The plan by Dr. Dusick, his diagnosis, rather, was chronic post-procedural pain. He did speak with Dr. Dershowitz, and Dr. Dusick noted in his note that Dr. Dershowitz stated that probing in the foot may have injured the medial or lateral plantar nerves distal to the tarsal tunnel. Dr. Dusick wanted to obtain some studies, the ultrasound, which I did eventually see, was consistent with a possible neuroma of the lateral plantar nerve. He also states that the late presentation will likely negatively affect his outcome. I did, as mentioned, see the ultrasound report. The patient did end up undergoing surgery with Dr. Dusick, but unfortunately, his symptoms did not resolve. There's another doctor that the patient saw in Washington, D.C., Dr. Firestone, We attempted to get these records, but to my knowledge, we don't have these. But by report, family report, the implant was moved into a different position. I wanted to, on my report, go down to the addendum before proceeding into my findings. This is at the bottom of the page. On June 23rd of 21, I was able to review the Washington Nerve notes, which we had requested. The ultrasound, as I mentioned, showed a normal tibial nerve in the calf, scarring of the medial plantar nerve, and distortion of the lateral plantar nerve at the level of surgery, and entrapment cannot be excluded. The pathology report from Dr. Dusick's surgery showed a lateral plantar nerve neuroma. Dr. Dusick's operative report noted irreparable lateral plantar nerve This was removed, and he did a nerve allograft. On June 29th of 21, I did discuss the case with Mrs. Kent. She informed me that she believed another operation was done by Dr. Firestone, which previously mentioned. Again, those records from Dr. Firestone I do not have. I also had, wanted to ask questions, as noted in my report, specifically the unusual anatomy encountered at the time of surgery was curious to me. Was this bony or soft tissue? This was not appreciated prior to surgery. I also asked if Dr. Dershowitz felt that there was a nerve injury at the time of surgery, and this was if so, this was not noted in the in his progress notes. I asked if Dr. Dershowitz agreed with the findings at the Washington Nerve Institute of a nerve injury, and as Dr. Dershowitz, by report from Dr. Dusick, said this is possible from this type of surgery. I also asked if a nerve injury was suspected, and this did continue, why was further workup or consultation not done? In response to those questions, Ms. Kent did send a supplemental response from Dr. Dershowitz, which I believe the board has. Am I correct, Heather?
Yes, Dr. Steck, the board does have that information.
Okay, so those responses to those questions are detailed in that supplement. I also called and spoke with Phil, the patient's father, on June 30th. I asked him several questions as well. He felt that the patient had a nerve injury immediately after surgery on the left foot and continues with these symptoms today. He confirmed that he did have surgery from Dr. Firestone in Washington, D.C. to adjust the position of the pin, quote-unquote. He cannot remember the exact date, but it was definitely after Dr. Dershowitz's surgery and before Dr. Dusick's nerve reconstruction surgery. I did ask why they proceeded with the contralateral foot when he was having so much pain in the initial surgical site. He told me that they said this was normal healing and just takes about a year to subside, and that he needed his other foot done anyway. They didn't understand the difference until after the second surgery was done, and they felt so much better after just 4 months. The father also felt that the most frustrating aspect is that he was told by the other two doctors that he saw that there was a nerve injury on their exam and testing confirmed, and that his ability to heal was diminished by delay in addressing the nerve issues. I did want to go over Dr. Dershowitz's responses to the questions that I had asked as well. In regards to question number one regarding the unusual anatomy, I asked if this was bone or soft tissue. This was necessitating a different incision. Dr. Dershowitz replied that the abnormality was osseous in nature. He also points out that there was another unusual osseous finding consistent with a thin shafted appearance of the mid shaft of the third metatarsal. Question number two was, I asked, did you think the patient had a nerve injury? He said that he felt that at the time, immediately postoperatively, that there was a transitory nerve compression injury, likely from the cast. He states that the assessment in the 10-118 note stated that there was no evidence of anesthesia or paresthesias. He said that he attributed his complaint to forefoot numbness, secondary to the cast. He also notes that the patient seemed to be improving and felt less numb. He also stated that the patient did go to physical therapy, and they also noted improvement in his dysesthesias, and this mitigated against his Dr. Dershowitz's thinking that there was a nerve injury, and what nerve irritation was there was improving. I did ask about Dr. Dershowitz's thoughts on the Washington Nerve Institute records. He mentions that the findings intraoperatively are what he describes. However, in his operative report, he did a thorough tarsal tunnel decompression and traced both branches of the tibial nerve, the medial and lateral plantar nerves, through the porta pedis, which there was no injury to the nerves in those locations until he reached the most distal portion of the lateral plantar nerve. Dr. Dershowitz wonders what his rationale was performing that extensive of a tarsal tunnel decompression, as there was no pathology until reaching the most distal aspect of the lateral plantar nerve, and could some of this extensive dissection also be responsible for later nerve pain? He also questions how a neuroma of the distal lateral plantar nerve, how it would have affected the fourth and fifth toes, and could this be responsible for subjective symptoms when no other symptoms were described by the patient. Also, I had a question about the x-rays of the 7/17/18 visit. Although in the initial note, it said that these x-rays were taken earlier, but there were x-rays on that same date. I did not see abnormalities in these x-rays. Dr. Dershowitz states that there's an increase in the Kite's angle, superimposition of the navicular upon the cuboid, as seen on the lateral, and some talonavicular beaking. And also early hallux valgus, he noted a rather large prominent anterior tibial tubercle of the calcaneus and an unusual thinning of the mid-shaft region of the third metatarsal. He also states that there are two sets of x-rays on this date. One set more clearly demonstrates pathology, and it was apparently only the more normal-appearing radiographs that Dr. Steck Mee commented on. And he's correct. I did not see the other x-rays. I commented on the x-rays that were dated on that date. Finally, I asked him about the nerve injury and why not get further workup. The response to this question was really already answered in his other response, and he did not believe that there was a nerve injury that needed further workup. In conclusion, for my findings, excuse me, I think that there's several issues concerns on. First of all was the x-rays. I just do not see the same types of findings that Dr. Dershowitz sees on these x-rays, and admittedly very subtle differences can be read differently by different doctors. Number two, x-rays taken on the 7/17 date states that these were taken previously, but no mention of where and when. These are, again, read as I previously mentioned, but I don't appreciate these findings on these the x-rays that I saw. Number three, upon review of the medical record from Dr. Dershowitz, it is not possible for me to determine the details of the patient's neurological complaints other than there weren't any. These they're just not documented on in the physical exam portion of any post-operative note. Post-op notes are identical and state improving subjectively. The review of system states without nerve complaint. And there is no documentation in the physical exam other than the phrase that I mentioned before, which was in every note on the physical exam. Inspection of the surgical site reveals no signs of infection, mild edema, incision healed, and bruising. There is one mention of slow healing and plantar dysesthesias, but without any physical exam support or any details of the condition. Number four, the Washington Nerve Institute notes are extremely detailed. This does not make them necessarily more accurate, but certainly different than Dr. Dershowitz's note. The neurological issues are clearly addressed in these notes, as I'd mentioned previously. As noted in my addendum, I do have the ultrasound report. Number five, it is unusual to me and curious that the patient would be in significant amount of pain yet proceed with the other foot. Is not something that typically happens in my experience. Number six, the unusual anatomy to the point that it caused a sinus tarsi incision to be placed incorrectly is also of concern. Is how, you know, if his anatomy was that much different for that sinus tarsi, that would cause an experienced surgeon to make an incision in a different location. Maybe the neurological or the neuroanatomy was also different, and the nerve could have been damaged during the surgery, whereas I think in their most circumstances this would be highly unlikely. Number seven, I think it is true that nerve injuries can take a very long time to heal, and sometimes these are indeed best treated with time. The fact that there's no documentation of these in the notes and no recognition of nerve injury was concerning to me as well, unless the patient clearly had no neurological complaints, which is the only conclusion I can come to with my reading Dr. Dershowitz's notes, other than slight paresthesias, which laser treatment was provided. Number eight, Dr. Dershowitz states in his note of 5/9/19 in the plan, there were plantar dysesthesias. This is about 6 months after the initial surgery, and I think the question I brought up to Dr. Dershowitz about further workup was also something that I brought up in my initial report that he addressed by the supplement. Lastly, I do not believe that the standard of care in our state is to have these types of nerve injuries repaired as it was done in Washington, D.C. with the nerve conduit or nerve graft. I do believe that further workup, if the patient was indeed experiencing nerve pain, however, would be prudent. A second opinion, nerve conduction studies, EMG or an MRI, pain management referral or neurology referral would be in order. The patient clearly had symptoms immediately after surgery and when he was seen in Washington, D.C. However, because of the inadequate documentation, I just cannot determine or comment on the nerve injury that Dr. Dershowitz did not comment on during his follow-up. Conclusion, I suspect that the patient likely did have a nerve injury of the left foot at the time of surgery. This really cannot be refuted or supported by the notes, however, from Dr. Dershowitz. It's all more from follow-up. The notes are clearly incomplete, in my opinion, however. Imaging and operative reports were reviewed, as mentioned in my addendum, and that's my report.
Thank you so much for that very complete evaluation of this case, Dr. Steck. I have a couple questions. In my opinion, I don't know that receiving any other information from Dr. Firestone, I believe the podiatrist or orthopedic surgeon that saw the complainant in Washington, D.C., would change your opinion, or it wouldn't, doesn't, I don't know that it's, I don't believe it's necessary to receive those records, because I don't think it's going to change your opinion or the outcome of the situation.
You know, I think I would doubt very much that those records would document a nerve injury from that operation. However, if is it possible that nerve damage could have happened during that operation? I think it is possible. And so I think that does throw a little bit of question into when the nerve injury occurred.
Thank you. The other issue too that I just was curious, of course with the issue of the documentation but the patient's level of pain, I don't see any that there was any thought of any maybe of a chronic, you know, of a CRPS situation developing with this patient. And the comment too about the x-rays, I agree, I did not appreciate on those x-rays the findings that he stated about Kite's angle. And so I did not see that. I'll be curious to see what the other physician members feel about that. But I think I don't have any other questions for you. Dr. Foreman, do you have anything for Dr. Steck?
The only question I have is with the MLS laser, if it was working on that foot and the patient's parents decided to proceed with the other foot, and then he stopped the laser and moved to Washington, and then had another surgery, I would like to see Dr. Firestone's notes, because if he was getting better with the physical therapist also, I don't, you know, there could be some, you know, when he went back in and moved the implant, could have caused other nerve damage. And that's one of the questions I had with this, because if he had surgery before he saw Dr. Dusick, it wasn't after Dr. Dershowitz. So there could have been some damage done by Dr. Firestone also. That was my, when I read through
this. Yeah, great. That's perfect. Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions for Dr. Steck?
Sure. Yes, I have a question, several questions for Dr. Steck. Dr. Steck, I know Dr. Dershowitz did several incisions on the left foot, one with a gastroscopy section, and several incisions to put in the implant. Which incision do you think that could have possibly damaged those plantar nerves?
You know, my understanding is there was three incisions, one at the gastroc and then two at the sinus tarsi, the second being made because of differences in anatomy making the sinus tarsi inaccessible from the first incision. Those incisions would be lateral, and so I don't believe the damage were... you know, the proposed damage to the nerve would be from the incision, but likely from instrumentation going through the sinus tarsi and possibly irritating or damaging the nerve on the medial side, is how I understood that.
Okay, with the extensive surgery. How about if a patient... would you say was having a lot of pain postoperatively, what you conclude to be nerve pain? Would you wait 1 year to refer to a neurologist, or could understand from the notes, Dr. Dosha would say he wouldn't be able to get into a neurologist for a year.
I did notice that too, and I think if that were the case, I would not wait a year. I would. Oh, I think it's arguable which direction you would go, but having more workup, whether a second opinion, nerve conduction study, neurology, pain management, would be in order well before a year.
Yeah, that's my thinking also. If they're having that much pain, I think it'd be appropriate to refer to a neurologist. I couldn't see if the patient experienced any weakness on that lip postoperatively from the notes.
I didn't see any of that either.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you, Dr. Steck, for your report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman and Dr. Yolano, for such insightful, good questions. Those are very important pieces of information. Dr. Dershowitz is not present because of a just couldn't be present. His attorney is present. We don't have the complainant present, but you all have received in your packet, there was an addendum that Heather sent. That's the letter from the parents of the patient. So, of course, they're not present telephonically or live to ask them questions. So at this point, I will ask Ms. Kent if she could make a statement, and I will preface that with, I don't think it's not prudent for us to ask medical questions of Ms. Kent because she was not involved in direct patient care, but she can certainly make remarks regarding the case. So, Ms. Kent, if you would like to make your remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell, and thank you, members of the board, and thank you, Dr. Steck. I think that was a very thorough and fair explanation of the issues. I cannot address some of the more intricate medical questions, but I can say that Dr. Dershowitz's record does clearly show that he thought that the patient might have had a mild neuropathy post-operatively and that he treated this and that there probably would have been more details about it if the patient had had severe or even moderate complaints of pain. But in fact, the records supported and corroborated by the physical therapy records show that this patient was improving. I think that Dr. Dershowitz would agree that if at any time he felt the patient's pain was escalating or the patient wasn't improving, that he would have referred the patient for specialty. I don't know whether that would have been pain management or neurology. And if you have any questions of Dr. Dershowitz, I would urge you to table this case so that he could be present. He had a death in the family this week. He had to travel to New Jersey, and he's currently today at a funeral, so he could not be present. But I hope that you'll review, Dr. Steck did a pretty good job, but I hope that you will review both our initial response and our supplemental response. There's no dispute that Dr. Dershowitz did not give this patient informed consent. This is a patient of his that had been his patient for 5 years before surgery. So he really waited until the patient's pain just required the surgery. The other thing I wanted to point out that maybe is not clear from these reports is that Dr. Dershowitz is highly experienced in inserting these implants. And they are, I think his note to me was that they are movable. And so I think the comment that on the cause of nerve injury is really, really important. because it is clear that the patient had some sort of dysthesias postoperatively that was improving. If he had stayed in Phoenix and stayed under Dr. Dershowitz's care, Dr. Dershowitz would have, if his complaints had increased, he would have referred him to a neurologist. But the fact that the patient had a surgery that we don't, haven't seen and we don't know, you know, it's you don't know what you don't know. And I think it's really critical to at least see those records if there's concerns about cause of injury or improvement, because it's very, very likely that any type of surgery in that area might have further injured a nerve that was already repairing on its own. And this board knows, and I know, and the evidence shows that nerve injuries take a long time to heal and that this nerve was in the process of healing. So I think that also the board should know that Dr. Dershowitz has retired. He served this community for 40 years, and he has closed his practice, and he's now retired. I urge the board to dismiss this complaint. In short, the documentation that could have been better would be confirmation that the patient was improving. If there had been more severe nerve complaints, more detailed examinations would have been noted and recorded. But it's not worthy of continuing this case on the board's agenda. If the board does want to continue, I urge you to wait until Dr. Dershowitz can answer your questions in person, because this is these type of detailed questions that have been raised would be better suited to him as opposed to me. But I think this case warrants a dismissal. I think the doctor waited and provided conservative therapy. He provided informed consent. Any type of neuropathy is an accepted risk of the procedure. And then he treated the dysthesia and believed, quite supported by the record, that the patient was improving, as evidenced by the fact that the patient came back for a second surgery. This is not curious. This is evidence that the patient's complaints were not moderate or severe or concerning to his parents, that they came back and asked the surgeon to perform the exact same surgery on the other foot, which again was 100% successful. I think that's all I have, Dr. Campbell. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kent. Anybody else have any other comments? Okay, well, in light of the discussion that we've just had, I would recommend at this time that we continue the investigation and request the records from Dr. Firestone in Washington, D.C., so that all possibilities can be reviewed. And then that way, with continuing the investigation, once that has that information has been received and it can be reviewed again by our investigator, Dr. Steck, and then we will then also be able to speak with Dr. Dershowitz in person, live or
Dr. Campbell,
telephonically.
Dr. Campbell, there's one other thing we noted, and I just want to be clear that the board knows. We learned through Dr. Steck's investigation that the patient has not just seen Dr. Firestone, but has also seen another podiatrist. So there's two podiatrists after Dr. Dershowitz, before the nerve surgery. We don't know what that first podiatrist or the second podiatrist also did in terms of procedure. So we would ask that the board get both sets of records, the ones from Dr. Firestone and the other podiatrist, who I don't know the name.
That was just my next question for you. So we'll have to, yeah, if we can determine who that is, we would certainly subpoena those records. So do we have the physical therapy notes? Okay, perfect. Then that's excellent. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. So we'll also, as part of my motion to continue, that we receive the subpoena the records of the podiatrist that gave care to the complainant in Washington, D.C., as well as the physical therapist is obviously here in town. Do we have the name for
Was that listed in the chart as to who saw the patient for PT?
Well, that should be in somewhere in Dr. Dershowitz's records. I don't remember seeing if a prescription for physical therapy by Dr. Dershowitz, an actual written prescription.
I don't recall any physical therapy notes in my review either.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Steck. Okay, so is that motion clear about the continuing the case? Does anybody have any comments or other questions? Dr. Yolanos, do you have anything else that you'd like to see?
No, okay. I'm good.
Okay, so just to clarify, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. We're going to continue the matter at the investigative phase, and in the interim, subpoena the records for Dr. Firestone, the physical therapist here in Phoenix, and the podiatrist, the other podiatrist that the complainant saw that we have yet to determine the name of.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you, Dr. Steck and Ms. Kent, for your time. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to now move to, we're going to segue. We'll come back to those investigating files, but we are going to go ahead to number six, which is a review and discussion of possible action regarding mandatory reporting pursuant to ARS 32-3208 pertaining to Dr. David Larson. Dr. Larson is present. Dr. Larson, if you'd like, you can come and have a seat. We also have his counsel present telephonically. Would you introduce yourself, sir?
Yes. Good morning, Board. This is Attorney Woody Thompson. I represent Dr. Larson. I'm just available if Dr. Larson has any questions for me or if the Board does, but I do not plan on making a statement. But I do understand that Dr. Larson would like to address the Board.
Okay. So, okay, so Dr. Larson, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Good to hear from you.
So I just wanted to be here today in person, just so you guys know this is important for me, and I want you guys to know that this is important. You know, I do take what I do in my personal and professional life very serious, and I truly love what I do, and I'm fulfilled and passionate about what I do. You know, as you saw from my statement, I've worked really hard to get to where I am today from having to put myself through, you know, high school for in college, served in the military, you know, graduated top 10% in my class. And the reason I'm saying this is because, you know, I'm an extremely driven individual, and I've worked hard to get to where I'm at, and that's why this is so important. So, you know, I've never had an issue in the past. I don't plan on having an issue in the future. You know, and I do take pride in being, you know, a professional and respectful member of the community. And I just was here, you know, just wanted to be here to apologize because that's not who I am as a person. In regards to the charges, you know, I have completed everything since this was a first-time thing. Everything's been accepted by this the city for a diversion. I've completed everything. I've completed all the classes. Everything's done and finalized. So they actually dismissed the case as of, I think, March 4th with no charges or anything. So, I'm here to answer any questions, but I felt it was important to be here in person to do that.
Thank you. Really appreciate you taking the time to come down and speak to us in person. I just have one. Do you think the course was a good course?
It was good, yeah. It was a different perspective, different way of thinking of things, and you know, I really got a lot out of it. So I did. I thought it was great, yeah. And it was recommended by Woody, so.
Oh, okay. So great. So if... Do they do any kind of recall with it, or, you know, say, hey, just kind of in 6 months, you know, send you something and say, hey, how are you doing if you need to come back, or do they do?
No, I actually, on my own accord, I'm going to keep working with them. I thought it was beneficial and a different way of looking at things, so just for me personally.
Well, like I said, I applaud you for coming. Thank you. And for being efficient and responding quickly to the issue that you had to try to solve the problem. It's really commendable. Mark, Dr. Foreman, I'm sorry. Do you have any comments, sir?
I'll diddle Dr. Campbell. She said it's a long
time. Dr. Ilano, do you have any remarks for Dr. Larson?
Sure. Dr. Larson, again, I'd like to reiterate, thank you for coming down and presenting this. I appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And thank you to your attorney for being present. If does anyone have any questions for Mr. Thompson? I don't. Okay, so that's all we need to do, but we don't need to make a motion for anything or anything like that. We'll just take notice of it. It's in, you know, it's in your file. It doesn't go any further than that. It's just here because we have to keep things like that. So.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Uh-huh. Be careful.
So this is Attorney Woody Thompson. I just wanted to confirm that this matter is being closed out.
Right. You noted that in your letter to the board, sir. We appreciate that. So we have that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. So let's go back to our investigative files. Number 5A, working with the Fed Westfall 21-15. Oh, he's here. Okay. Pardon me. Well, let's go to Dr. Scott Mayling's case. I believe Dr. Mayling is present telephonically. And Mr. Crawford, are you there?
I am. I apologize. The freeway was closed this morning, so I had to appear telephonically as well. I intended to be there in person.
No problem. Yeah, Heather told us about the accident, so on the freeway. So we have 21-08-C, which is Dr. Scott Mayling. The investigator is Dr. Saunders. We do not have the complainant KN present, so we'll just go ahead and have Dr. Saunders give his report.
Okay, I am here. Good morning. This should be a little bit more concise than the last one. So the patient, KN, formed a complaint regarding concerns regarding her post-operative management. She had a concern that she had a retained suture needle that she pulled out of her foot post-operatively. His secondary concerns of the way she was treated by Dr. Malling's MAs. She had some nerve damage and a post-operative infection, according to her. And there was some communication that went back and forth. I did have a telephone call with her. The biggest concerns regarding the MA care was that she thought that the MA was rude. There were some concerns going back and forth that taking out sutures was painful, and the MA did not necessarily hold her hand as well during that. Therefore, the patient KN thought that there were some suture tags that were remaining in the foot that she continued to pull out, portions of the thread that were left in her foot after the visit. She had some secondary concerns that the patient was dismissing her pain, as I mentioned. Down the road during the recovery, she believes that a sewing needle from the surgery was taken out of her foot that she used a tweezers to get this out of. She did send a picture to the board, which I'll address. But that actual foreign body or whatever it was not ever visualized by any other surgeon or physician. She said that she took it out herself. Looking at the medical records and Dr. Mailing's response, I'll highlight some of the response that he put on there. This was first brought to Dr. Mailing's attention from the surgery center contacting him regarding the complaint, as the patient KN addressed it with the surgery center. Of highlights, Dr. Mailing's report is that the risk management did a review and confirmed that the counts were correct. And again, as I said on my report there, that no needles ever brought in for review. This is a patient that Dr. Mailing did a second opinion for. The patient had some prior surgery done approximately a year before, for which Dr. Mailing subsequently brought back to surgery as that patient failed conservative measures. In the operative report, Dr. Mailing points out that there was some adhesions noted around the sural nerve. He also points out that surgical counts during the procedure in the operating room were correct. There was some difficulty, I guess, during the COVID period that the patient didn't come in for follow-up appointments and, you know, requested telemedicine and was texting during the post-operative recovery. And, you know, Dr. Mailing encouraged a face-to-face encounter, but it was, there were only two of them, I believe, done. During the course of recovery, Dr. Mailing relates that the patient did get some antibiotics. He reviews in his notes that there's noncompliance. The patient did not take the antibiotics as instructed, and the patient did cancel appointments. When I did the chart review, you know, the patient first was seen on 10/27. This is approximately a month before Dr. Mailing did the surgery. There's MRI confirmation of a peroneal tear for which the patient had surgery for 6 months prior. The patient did fail conservative measures, and this is well documented in the chart. The patient was subsequently brought to surgery approximately a month later. Surgery was performed. There were multiple procedures performed. There was a resident present. And no complications were mentioned during the procedure. So approximately, you know, almost 2 weeks later, the patient was seen for the post-op appointment. Incision was noted to be coapted, healed. Patient's partial weight-bearing allowing the boot at this point, and everything appeared to be normal. Neurovascular status was intact. And at that point, the patient wanted a telemedicine as she could not come in for, I don't know if it was COVID or transportation issues. But a patient was sending pictures via text messages to Dr. Mailing or the office, and you know, no signs of infection is documented. The patient was progressing fine. This continued with text pictures as the patient had some concerns regarding the wound. You know, in my opinion there, there's a small eschar. I think Dr. Mailing noted no signs of infection. Subsequent pictures are going now 2 months post-op. There was some yellow fibrotic tissue in the one pictures, some mild redness as the patient was concerned, sending in a texting. And Dr. Mailing, you know, he advised the patient to be seen in the office. He was making himself available immediately for the patient. He did call in Bactrim. Subsequently then, following week or so, there's a note in the chart that she had called several times that the redness is better. There's still an eschar formation noted. Patient was seen and the wound in the office for the second time. Wound was debrided and wound care was established with Prisma. Patient was then progressing out of the CAM boot into an ankle brace physical therapy. Radiographs were taken and the implants were noted to be in place. Another picture comes by, a text message at the end of the month. This is almost after 2 months, patient has a local rash peri-incisionally. The doctor had some communication with her. The patient then reported that she had stopped the antibiotic a few days after because she was having a reaction, but did not communicate this with the office or Dr. Mailing. And in the text message, she actually records that she admits to being a bad patient. And then down the road, after I inquired for it, the patient did submit a picture to the board of what she is describing as a sewing needle. I looked at this picture. I honestly don't know what it is. It could have been a biodegradable anchor. I think discussing a communication Dr. Mailing's office, he did not put in a biodegradable one. It could have been anything. And as far as I know, the patient did seek another opinion by another podiatrist. I don't have those notes. She had related to me via telephone that the doctor said it could have been a sewing needle. you know, I did contact that doctor. He's never returned my phone call. But I don't think anybody knows what that actually was. It could have been something she stepped on. I looked at some of the billing. Everything's appropriate for procedures that are documented. When I go through all the documents, this patient had an injury to her ankle. It didn't heal satisfactorily the first time. She had some reconstructive procedures done. There were compliance issues that I noted, communication issues. The pictures that are that were sent to Dr. Mailing in the office do not correlate a raging infection. Again, I don't know what the picture of that she said she pulled out of the foot. I don't know what that was. I think care was appropriate. Antibiotics were prescribed. They weren't taken appropriately, but they were prescribed appropriately. Wound care was established for, a slight dehiscence that you can see on the pictures. Post-operative x-rays are normal for this. The surgery center reports that the surgical counts were correct, as is typically done in every case. And no adverse event was actually reported by the center. So I think that the care by Dr. Mailing was appropriate. I think it's within the standard care. And I don't think there's any real problem here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Saunders. I don't have any other questions, but when you're talking about going back to another doctor, she went, by the records it indicated, she went back to the person who did the first surgery that she had before Dr. Mailing did the second surgery. So, Dr. Norman, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, very complete, no questions.
Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions?
No, thank you, Dr. Saunders.
Okay, and so we do have the complainant is not here, so we won't. We have Mr. Crawford and Dr. Mailing. So, Dr. Mailing, if you would, you want to give us a synopsis or summary of things, and then we can ask you questions.
Sure. This was the thing where the patient had a perineal repair by a previous surgeon. She had continued pain. She had increasing burning going up her leg. She had a repeat MRI that showed not only tear of her initial, I think it was her peroneus brevis initially, but then she also had tear of longus. I sent you guys pictures, intraoperative pictures of those. We repaired those. We tightened up her collateral ligaments. Postoperatively, she was, difficult to deal with as far as just following up. She felt like it was more appropriate to just take my, once I called her once in response to her questions, it just became this ongoing thread of anytime she had a question, it was just a text to me. I treated the wound that was, again, very minor at first, and it started after she went into the boot. She'd also called my office a couple of days after that. She got the boot and said she didn't want to wear it. It was more comfortable for her to just walk around barefoot and use her crutches periodically in the house, when she was in the third week postoperatively. And then the next follow-up visit was when she came in and she had that little eschar, and then that progressively got worse, according to her. And the first thing I heard about this after my last text with her, when she didn't take her antibiotics and sent me a note saying, I didn't take them and I didn't call you, because it was 16 days later after she stopped taking the antibiotics that she finally texted me and said that, I didn't take them, and my friend told me I had to call you, and I know I'm a bad patient. So that was the end of the communication. She had an appointment the following day or the day after, which she no-showed on. And according to her complaint, she had already actually seen the other doctor again prior to that discussion. So, from my perspective, it was just one of those things that, she developed a post-operative wound, and those unfortunately will happen, especially with people that are smokers and or have had previous surgeries. And as far as this needle, the only thing that to me, and I haven't seen a picture of it, she never produced it. That was the first I heard of there was a problem, was when she was called by the surgery center because she had an outstanding bill. And she said, oh, I'm glad you called. I was going to call you because you left a needle in my foot. And that was quite shocking to everybody. So we reviewed all the charts, and everything was appropriate there. I do use a barbed closure suture, Stratafix, which is a monocrural suture that has a loop on it. I've never seen a picture of what was pulled out, so I can't speak to that. But that's the only thing that I could think it would be.
All righty. I have a couple little questions. So did she ever say she had trauma after that first surgery she had before you did your surgery?
No, she didn't. She said she had multiple sprains over the course of time, but just continued to have continued pain and palpable subluxation of her peroneal tendons, which is what I explained to her. This is why her initial repair probably wasn't progressing, because if that subluxation's not addressed and it's just a straight repair of that tendon, it's going to continue to subluxate, which is what it's done, and then it subsequently tore her longus as well.
And then, you know, and she didn't express any post-operative trauma, or you didn't, after your surgery, you didn't see any evidence that it could have occurred. But, and then you just mentioned the fact that she decided that she wasn't going to wear a boot and just go barefoot. So, and she didn't wear, you offered her a brace too, right, that she wouldn't wear?
Well, my typical protocol is they go from the splint after 2 weeks into the boot, start physical therapy, start partial weight bearing as tolerated, and typically by week 5 to 6, they'll start transitioning to a brace. But if she wasn't wearing the boot, I recommended that she come and get the brace at least to have some support. I don't know if it was the boot initially that caused a little bit of that rubbing that led to the eschar, which is possible, but that's my typical protocol for that. And no other injury. She said her ankle felt great. She said the burning pain that she was having outside of the ankle, she wasn't having. It was just all about the wound, which, again, was pretty minor in my perspective from the types of wounds that we typically see. And then when she did finally call and text and say she had some increased redness, I prophylactically put her on the Bactrim, which she didn't take. But the only thing I heard of after that was when she was called or contacted about her surgery center bill, and that's when she made the statement about the needle, and that's been the whole, you know, push for this thing to go forward from her perspective.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I will say that. Now, this question, I don't know if you want to address it or if Mr. Crawford would. I saw in the file that there was an initial claim report, but no allegations were listed. Has that progressed to anything?
I'm Dr. Campbell, this is Bruce. I'm not sure what you're referring to. I think the doctor reported it to his insurance company when this lady made a complaint. That just triggers insurance coverage, i.e. gets me involved.
Okay.
She's continued to send him texts and on other issues, and I finally had to step in and to send her a message that she wasn't to contact him or his office anymore, and that if she had any further communications she wanted to share, that she should go through us. He said, thanks, I'll speak with a lawyer, and we haven't heard really anything more at this point. Just real quick, one thing I wanted to throw in here is just that, you know, this whole needle issue, the needle that Dr. Malin used, if it truly was a needle, it would be very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you know, she calls him and she makes this claim after she's being called about the fact she hasn't paid a bill, claims that, you know, a needle was left in. And that's when she speaks with Dr. Malin about it. She comes in 3 days later, and then she doesn't bring in the alleged needle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, yeah.
The bottom line is the counts were correct, and it would be perfectly obvious to everybody in terms of everybody who's trained to do surgery, what a surgical needle looks like. So, you know, Dr. Mehlein provided very appropriate care to this lady. She decided she was going to handle things the way she wanted to handle things, and, you know, I apologize, but there's just no basis for this complaint. It should be dismissed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we all have the same feeling. Do you have any questions, Dr. Foreman? Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay. Well, I think with this,
I see no statute violation.
So in regards to our discussion, and I believe what we all understand has happened here, I will go ahead and make a motion to dismiss case number 21-08-C, citing no violations of state statute.
Second it.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. I'm going to remove, or I'm going to take us back out of the investigation files since Mr. Crawford is present for one other thing. That way we can let him go here in a minute. And that way then we have the appropriate time we need to devote to the last investigation file. So hang on a second.
Thank you guys for your time.
Pardon me?
Thank you for your time. It's Dr. Mehlein.
Thanks, sir, Dr. Mehlein. Okay, so we're going to go on to 7, which is a review, discussion, and possible action regarding the correspondence that we received from Mr. Crawford regarding Dr. Seth Clark relating to complaint 20-23-C. So hang on a second. So everybody must have obviously read that response, the letter from Mr. Clark. I was going to call him Mr. Crawford. I don't want to, like, think when they got the same beginning of the name, you know, it's kind of, the old lady messes up. Okay, so anyway, so we received the letter, and let me get my comments here just a second, that we've been through this case before, so let me... So at this time, we've seen this issue and have adjudicated it previously with discipline, which was a probation and a continuing education, etc. So the only concern that seems to have been raised here is a concern about the differences in the statements that were made to the board by Dr. Clark in between and at his litigation. And we really have a lack of jurisdiction at this point in time. So I will make a motion to just dismiss 20-23-C.
Second it.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Is there any other discussion or questions on this? All righty. So it's been moved and seconded, so we'll vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go back now to our last investigation file, which is 21-15-C, which is Dr. Chad Westfall. Dr. Polakoff is our investigator, and we have Robin Burgess, who is Dr. Westfall's counsel, is present on the phone. Dr. Westfall is not present, and we have the complainant PM who is present. So we'll go ahead and have Dr. Polakoff give her investigator's report and give time for questions for to ask of her, and then we will hear from the complainant, and then we'll move from there with Dr. Westfall's counsel. So, Dr. Polakoff, please, your report.
Thank you, Board, and good morning. This is Dr. Polakoff for case 2116C, Chad Westfall. The complainant, initials PM, made a complaint regarding concerns over her treatment of the injured ankle. She went to see Dr. Chad Westfall for an injury that she had to the ankle when she tripped into a little hole while at a park. She went to the emergency room. The emergency room took x-rays, and they referred her to an orthopod, and she went to Dr. Chad Westfall. She stated that if the doctor did not know how to properly treat a broken ankle, he should have referred her to a surgeon who did. Allegation number one, poor documentation of ankle injury, and I substantiated this. Dr. Chad Westfall failed to properly describe this specific ankle injury in accordance with the standard of care documentation used to describe medical conditions as a physician, including proper documentation of ankle injuries both throughout the podiatric and orthopedic medical communities. Even if Dr. Westfall did not use the names of the most common ankle injury classifications, the injuries observed by x-rays and gathered from the examination of the patient are all sufficient for another physician to understand or take over the case by just reading the medical information provided by Dr. Westfall. Medical description of the ankle, alignment of the foot and leg, range of motion, etc., were not present. The notes of doctor and the patient do not match. He says that she should start weight-bearing with regular shoes. She says that she could only walk 2 to 3 steps. It was very painful, swelling, and could not bend. Allegation number two, harm to the public. Insufficient care of an ankle fracture. I substantiated this. If we were to use a classification that is common, such as the Log-Hansen, of this traumatic ankle injury, this severe injury would meet all the criteria for an SER4 injury, which is an unstable, short, oblique fracture of the distal fibula with a medial malleolus fracture or deltoid ligament disruption. X-rays were taken, but descriptions and the results were not documented. Even if Dr. Westfall thought that conservative care was the proper treatment choice, 25 days post bimalleolar or possible trimalleolar fracture injuries are far too early for weight bearing. This is a displaced ankle fracture. The plafond is disrupted. All signs indicate a surgical repair is needed to allow this patient to ambulate with any chance of a normal life. In review of the banner x-rays taken at the emergency room and Dr. Westfall, this should have been a surgical case for the ankle injury of this otherwise healthy patient. I just want to note that the patient had no indications that would detour surgery. She was healthy and good condition. In my review of this case and that of Dr. R. Scott's review of the patient and her x-rays, surgery should have been the first option recommended to this patient with the goal of a full recovery back to a pre-injury activity level. The medical literature supports this recommended care. Both podiatric and orthopedic literature consensus state that an SER4 injury is an inherently unstable injury. If Dr. Westfall did not choose to perform a surgical repair, which is his choice, he should have identified the severity and implications of an unstable ankle fracture and referred this patient to another physician for the surgery. Just one second. The patient went to the ER on 2-16-20. It is well known throughout the podiatric community that podiatrists are the best at reading podiatric lower extremity films. X-ray films scanned by some radiologists do not represent what the X-rays contain and are typically read incorrectly. This goes for a percentage of the X-rays for regular X-rays, MRIs, and CTs of lower extremities. Podiatrists are much better at reading this. Unfortunately, the x-rays taken at the ER were read in my opinion, not accurately. They were read stating that there was an oblique, minimally displaced fracture of the distal right fibula. This is a questionable fracture fragment just anterior to the anterior lip of the distal left tibia. This is also on the lateral view, and the conclusion of this was no acute bony abnormalities of the left foot, partial obliquely minimally displaced fracture. When you look at the X-ray, this does not this is not representative of this X-ray description. On 2/20/20, Dr. Westfall saw the patient for the first time. In his notes, he says X-rays were reviewed. The question is, did he review just the report of the X-rays, or did he actually see the X-rays? And he wrote in his notes just what the radiologist of the hospital said, mildly displaced right bimalar ankle fracture. He dispensed the cam walker and advised the patient on use of the cam walker and the Una boot compression. And then on 3/19/20, the patient was advised to get limited weight bearing in the cam walker rice, and then wear the cam walker for about 2 more weeks than regular shoes. In considering the extent of this injury, ambulation at this time was far too early. In review of Dr. Ryan Scott's notes and discussion with this case, he stated on his 8/17/20 visit that the patient had pain getting worse since 2/16/20. Another physician placed her into a CAM for 6 weeks. She underwent physical therapy. Pain increased, no relief. Unfortunately, he wrote, I wish we would have caught this earlier and ultimately underwent an ORIF of a right ankle fracture. This would have helped stabilize her ankle and put her in a neutral position. She has 3 options of surgery impending to proceed with care. In review of Dr. Westfall's attorney's comments, the governor issued a delay of elective surgeries to conserve personnel equipment necessary to test and treat patients for COVID, which began on Saturday, March 21st, 2020. This order was for elective surgery. This ankle injury is not elective surgery. I have also queried 4 podiatrists who do high-volume surgical repairs, and they all did surgeries during February, March, and April for their emergency surgical procedures. They stated that they had no problems at all getting surgical time for ankle fractures such as this, one a fractured tibia, one a fractured fibula, one a fractured calcaneus. And in conclusion, I do believe it's Dr. Westfall's right and opinion to not do surgery on a patient if he feels that surgery is not indicated. But in this case, I do fault him for not recognizing the severity of this injury, which is well documented. And in conclusion, it is clear from the literature presented, which went from the 1990s through 2010 for the literature that I provided, it is clear that the survey that 85% of physicians among the orthopedic community and the podiatric community lead to surgical intervention in an inherently unstable SCR case. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Polakoff, Dr. Campbell. You know, you go back to thinking what we were taught in school. An unstable fibular fracture, you don't have a stable ankle. I mean, that's pretty darn basic. One other, you know, comment, too, that now for my colleagues, it's on page 458 in our packet. In the ED summary document of 2/16/2020, they indicate, this is the plan and what was given to the patient, call Core Institute tomorrow and schedule an evaluation of the ankle injury. You do have a severe fracture, and further treatment will be needed. This is likely to require, at minimum, a splint, and may need surgery for proper healing. So here they're indicating this is a severe fracture. I have a ton of questions for Dr. Westfall. Of course, he's not here, but let me ask you, I have a couple other ones. You indicated about the issue with emergent surgeries being done by colleagues, which is what I understand also. Did you see
I'm sorry, you're breaking up.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Dr. Pollock. Did you see any communication in the medical records that indicated that the doctor had difficulty scheduling any surgeries?
No, I did not. And it was the patient mentioned that he said that she is lucky because she is in the, I believe, the 25%. Classification that doesn't need surgery for this, that'll heal just fine.
Yeah, and I don't certainly like to know how one figures out that somebody's in that 25%.
My question.
Did you see any indication in the medical record if there was questioning of the patient after being in the emergency room, obviously, for a trauma, if there had been any other previous histories of trauma or instability to that ankle to begin with?
No, there were not.
Like I said, I also saw that the patient was on vitamin D for vitamin D deficiency. She was taking 1,000 international units twice a day. She did look like at the time of surgery she wasn't smoking, but she'd had a previous history of smoking. Of course, this is something too that we can ask the complainant about. So, and back regards to the executive order by the governor, to me that trumps anything that a hospital is saying, because there was some indication of what was allowed in certain hospitals or doctors that are employees of hospital situations. I still think, being that they're the captain of the ship, and here we have an emergent situation. And if you look at that, the wording of the order from Governor Ducey, undue risk to current or future health of the patient. Well, I think that was certainly violated. The other question, too, in regards to documentation, saying that they were short-staffed and, my
opinion. You're breaking up. Dr. Campbell, you're breaking up.
My comment about medical records, making complete medical records, even though one is short staffed. That it's on the onus of the physician to have complete records. Because the attorney in the second response indicated that they were short-staffed and there was no scribe, so that the doctor's notes are not very good because he didn't have a scribe.
That is not an excuse at all for not having your documentation complete.
Oh, one other question, too. Do you feel that in treating this kind of ankle by, immobilization, of course, we always have the possibility of injury and that things can become further displaced, but I did not see anything in the record indicating any thought of using a lipos or bone stimulator? And do you think if those were employed, would it have made much of a difference that the patient then actually go into surgery later?
I do not believe that would have impacted the surgical choice. If you look at the x-rays, look at the shifting of the plafond, look at the position of the ankle, you cannot reposition that. You have to physically get in there and move it back.
Right.
It's not a hard surgery at all. I've done hundreds, over 100 in my career of these, if you add up all the 30 years of practice. but this needs surgical. You can surgical repair. You cannot get the ankle sitting on top of proper of the foot to the leg if you don't move it over.
I agree with you. And of course, in the TUI of the issue of a possible osteochondral defect or lesion or the posterior malleolar fracture, making a trimalleolar fracture, because you know how those things hide out. So
correct.
Okay.
Or the deltoid disruption in there, too.
Yes, of course. Yes. And Dr. Foreman, do you have questions for Dr. Polakoff, sir?
No, I think the issue is very complete.
Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions?
Sure. You know, with all the pain that PM was experiencing, you think at some point it would have been appropriate even just take an MRI or to see what kind of soft tissue damage is there if you feel like it was going to heal?
Absolutely. If I just read the report that the radiologist sent, I would not have fully understood the extent of this injury. And if the patient, such as this, already waited a few days or almost a week and a half before the ER to see Dr. Westfall, I definitely think I would have had time to get an MRI in there before I arranged the surgery. Then I would have planned in my mind exactly the extent of the surgery that I need, discuss it with the patient, saying that it showed X, Y, and Z. This cannot be treated conservatively. We need to move you to surgery right now, and explain that to the patient.
Thank you.
I also understand Dr. Westphal took x-rays in his office to redo the x-rays that was done in the ER. On the last set of x-rays that Dr. Westphal took, what was the patient weight-bearing at all? Because he wanted her to be semi-weight-bearing with a cam boot.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Did Dr. Westphal attempt to just see how the foot was with weight-bearing when he took x-rays in his office?
I don't think she was weight-bearing because she couldn't put weight on it. It was very painful.
Okay, because I understood it. He wanted her to bear weight on her foot on the last set of x-rays that he took in his office.
Thanks, Dr. Yolanda. Do you have anything else?
Sure. So I just wanted your opinion one more time. This type of surgery that was going to be undergone by PM, this is going to be totally non-elective. So it would have been an emergent basis to get that repaired.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
And may I add one point, Dr. Campbell?
Yes, ma'am.
If this waited like it did to and was treated conservatively, the patient was put in an Una boot and a cam. Let's say she went on and then she healed and she couldn't bear weight comfortably, but at least the time period might have lapsed for the COVID precautions in the hospitals. The problem is, during this time, she was already starting to heal and diffuse in this malposition. In the position that her ankle ended up in, the problem is bending, flexibility, ambulation. The only thing to go to now is more severe surgery, such as a complete ankle fusion.
Of course.
There you go.
Thank you so much. All right, now, we have our complainant. Her initials are PM. So I will ask PM if she would please summarize. We've read her portion of in our documentation, but we would like to hear her views of things summarized. And then, ma'am, we will take time to ask you specific questions. All right?
Okay. Yeah, just a clarification on the smoking. My comment on the smoking was I did it as a teenager.
Oh, okay.
Never have been. So I don't know how that got in there, but
it was weird.
A joke when they asked me that.
Yeah, it was weird because your chart said different. They had different categories of smoking, and it looked like they had said you'd smoked then, and then you hadn't smoked. So that's why we wanted to know.
Okay, just to clarify that. And also, the February 16th of 2020 was when I broke my ankle, and then I saw Dr. Westfall 4 days later. So it was the next, that was a Sunday, and I saw him on Thursday. He did say that the hospital x-rays were not good. He took x-rays in his office and supposedly went by those. It was just one thing after another, and I know you've got my four-page or whatever written up, so I'm not going to go into all of that except for I just don't understand, and it looks like, I mean, when I went in to see Dr. Scott, when my insurance finally would go through with him, I mean, he just kind of looked at the x-rays and went, you should have been on the operating table 7 to 10 days after you fell. He said there was no other choice. And I said, well, that's not what I was told. And the x-rays, Dr. Scott and Dr. Westfall, every time I went in, took x-rays. And like you've said, the delay in surgery, Dr. Scott having to re-break everything and put it back together, and they did not have to fuse it. That was one of the choices Dr. Scott gave me, but I went with repair and, well, the three choices were live with it, fuse it, or repair and re-break and repair. And that's what I went with. And so far, I still have a little bit of issues with it, but nothing like it was after no surgery. I think that's about all I've got to say because I kind of took notes, but it was finally, yeah. And I'd just like to thank Heather and Deidre Cohen for guiding me through this and everybody that's there now in the process. Thank you so much.
I have another question, ma'am. Have you been on the vitamin D for a long time?
About 7 years.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Let's see what. And prior to you injuring your ankle on the 16th of February of 20, did you ever have any issues of like chronic spraining or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
And after you saw Dr. Westfall and were in the boot, did you had no other injuries to it after that?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. Let me think if
I think, because he did tell me, let me see. Where is it? Because that was something that there was a little bit okay, I broke it on the 16th, and then when I saw him on the 20th, he said on or about March 12th to try to start putting weight on it. But up until March 12th, I was supposed to have no weight, which I did not. And March 12th, I started, and I think I went 3 or 4 more days after that, and then I was able just around the house to, you know, walk into the bathroom or, you know, walk to the kitchen sink and stand. That type of thing. And then it just progressively, I mean, I couldn't even walk around the block down the street, let alone without pain and limping.
Have you ever broken any other bones and had any trouble healing?
No. Okay. The only other thing I think I broke, which I'm not sure, was my little toe.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so how are you doing now?
Yeah.
How are you doing now?
Much, much better. There's still, I get, my leg and my hips get really tired. But there's still twinges every once in a while. But for the most part, definitely better. Definitely better.
This is, you might think this is an unusual question. During that time, with what was going on in the world, would you have been afraid to go to the hospital for an emergency surgery?
No.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely not.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I Dr. Scott, I still did it through COVID because I had the surgery, oh gosh, something 21. So October 21 is when I had the surgery, or just before that. Yeah, October 6th.
Right. Okay.
So, but no, I absolutely, because Dr. Scott, that was his first thing was, I said, well, what about, by the time I saw him, I said, what about COVID? And he goes, this isn't elective.
Yeah.
This is not elective surgery.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to see if, Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for the complainant?
When you started weight bearing and you started having the pain, did Dr. Westfall talk about doing an MRI or a surgery at that time?
No. His nurse, I never spoke to him, well, except for the visits. But when I called, the nurse always said, well, she talked to him and got back with me and said, he feels it's totally normal. Even after the last actual office visit, he came in and said, didn't quite heal right. But never mentioned anything going for an MRI, either at the beginning of it or when I stopped seeing him. My last visit with him was April, I think it was. But no, there was no mention of any MRI, any other testing, anything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Dr. Yolanda, do you have questions for our complainant?
Sure. Hi, Pam. I've got a question. Did Dr. Westfall ever discuss extensively this surgical intervention for your ankle?
No, he never mentioned anything about, and I think I heard your question correctly, he never mentioned anything about surgery. His comment was, 75% of the people need surgery with this kind of a break, and you're in the 25, you're good.
Okay. And did he mention anything in regards to if we do have to go surgery, there's a problem with being elective versus non-elective surgery for this?
He never mentioned that. Dr. Scott said it was not elective.
Okay. I just wanted to know in the discussion when you had with him if he ever mentioned the surgery could be elective or non-elective.
No, he never mentioned, Dr. Westfall never mentioned surgery. Needing it, whether, okay. You'll be better if you do have it or don't have it or whatever, it was you don't need it.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have questions for. Dr. Campbell, you're going in and out. I can't hear anything.
Okay, so we have the doctor's counsel is present telephonically, Robin Burgess. So if this is Ms. Burgess would like to make a comment, I would appreciate that at this time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Campbell and members of the board. I will be brief. Dr. Westfall, unfortunately, was unavailable. He had a conflict today. And so I obviously cannot answer questions relating to the actual medical decision-making or care other than that which was presented in the written materials through me from Dr. Westfall. But here, I think that one thing that is sort of being a little bit missed is the unique situation that Dr. Westfall was in that I don't know that others, can kind of attest to. I heard from Dr. Polakoff that she had spoken to some other high-volume physicians. I don't know anything about who they may have been, but Dr. Westfall is hospital employed and has to work within the parameters of what the hospital will permit. And Banner Hospital was one of the early large hospital systems to get ahead of or try to get ahead of some of the concerns about the impending COVID pandemic. And they shut things down a little bit sooner out of concern for staffing. They didn't, let's go back to February, March 2020, at the very infancy of the pandemic. There were great concerns over availability of PPE, availability of respirators, and they were moving things out of ORs into floors, getting ready for what they believed to be and turned out to be accurately, an onslaught of ICU patients with significant respiratory needs, and of course, an extremely dangerous and highly contagious virus that was affecting people. And so at that point in time, Dr. Westfall had some limitations on what he was allowed to do. And even in February, he was being limited in, even in terms of when he could be in the office. He was not allowed to be scheduling surgeries. They were trying to shut down surgeries for things that were not super emergent. And I understand that in this case, and perhaps with a bit of hindsight, this does appear that this should have been more of an emergency surgery. But at the time, when Dr. Westfall was looking at the patient, he was cautiously optimistic that she would be able to heal, and kept her immobilized in order to try and foster that healing. So the circumstances for where Dr. Westfall was working was a little bit unique. Staff was being diverted away from any of the podiatry areas, away from certain ORs, which is where the podiatry surgeries were taking place. And he had, I think, an assessment that this patient did have the potential for healing with conservative therapy. He saw her on two more occasions and was trying to foster the healing process. He did allow the patient after the second visit to try some very light weight bearing as needed, just to be a little bit more mobile around the home, but did not, it was more like to just get her to be able to pivot and walk around a little bit in order to function as opposed to being completely sedentary. He did understand the patient was in pain, but the healing process does take time, and he was hopeful that things would look good. The patient did not return to him after the beginning of April, and Dr. Westfall was not able then to reassess her, perform more imaging studies to evaluate what her level of healing was at that point. And I think he would concur, if he were able to today, that had she returned in April or May and was still having healing issues, at that point in time, he probably would have recommended moving forward with an alternate procedure such as surgery to try and stabilize that ankle. She did not come back to him, and it wasn't until about 2 months later that she saw another doctor. And in June is when Dr. Westfall himself was also able to go back to doing surgeries. And I believe that he would agree that had the patient returned to him, he also likely would have seen that she needed to go to surgery for more definitive repair. I think that this is a unique situation. Dr. Westfall has been in practice for 16 years. This is his only complaint. And I think that what was going on here was unfortunately a combination of timing and circumstances, and also in Dr. Westfall's initial judgment, he felt that there was potential, perhaps the patient was on the bubble, but he felt that there was a potential that conservative therapy could be effective for her. I just want to briefly touch on the charting issue. Although Dr. Westfall has advised that he had a scribe that normally would be taking more detailed notes for him, and that scribe had been taken away for other purposes within the hospital system. So he acknowledges that the actual written charting may not be as robust as he would have liked, but I think he takes he disagrees with the perception that a subsequent podiatrist would not be able to evaluate the patient's condition or needs. First of all, X-rays themselves and imaging tell a lot of the story. And an evaluation of the patient on each visit will tell what's going on at that moment in time, and any subsequent practitioner would certainly want to do those types of assessments independently to assess what was going on with the patient, look back at films to see the status of healing. So I think Dr. Westfall's response is that although his written notes may not be as clean and detailed as normal, he does believe that any subsequent podiatrist, and the podiatrist here who saw the patient subsequently, doesn't seem to have had any issue with evaluating what was going on with her. So I just wanted to kind of comment on that. I don't know if there's anything else that I can help address from my perspective, but obviously Dr. Westfall feels that he did the best he could under the circumstances that he had limiting him to some extent at the time frame in question, and hopes that the board understands the circumstances. Thank you.
We appreciate your comments, Ms. Burgess, but and as you have said, you can't answer. There are a lot of, we want to talk to Dr. Westfall. And it is my understanding from my executive director that you were given a continuance already on this case. And if Dr. all of a sudden has a conflict, we need to talk to him. And so, you know, he knew he had this coming up. So, if it was a family emergency or something like that, that's a different story. But we're not knowing what his conflict is. That now this puts us out in adjudicating a case. So all my colleagues, we've all asked questions. We've heard from the complainant. We've heard from our investigator. And you have spoken to us. And so at this point, I am going to make a motion to move this to an informal hearing so that we can speak directly with Dr. Westfall, because if we go to continuation of it and then we still have questions, the way our protocol works was we'd have to, if we had allegations, we're going to have to move it to that way anyway. So to cut to the chase, that's why I am making a motion to send case 21-15-C to an informal hearing with the, these are not, I'm not saying that he violated these statutes, but these are the ones that we will put as alleged violations. Let me find my, that it's under the heading of, this is under unprofessional conduct, that will be 32-854.01. The first would be number 11, which is the failing or refusing to maintain adequate medical records on a patient. And then number 21 is committing any conduct or practice that is or might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient. These are only allegations. They have not been proven, and that's what we hope to accomplish at an informal interview.
Were you going to provide some facts now to support this?
I have them, and that's what there's. This is a very involved case. Of notes. Just give me a moment. Well, with the documentation, that would be related to the fact of, saying that there is no.
Dr. Campbell, you're breaking up.
Documentation.
I apologize. I really can't hear anything that you're saying, doctor.
Yeah, okay. Hang on a sec. As far as putting the patient at risk, that has to do with not treating this as an emergent situation for the surgery. Yes, that's my motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Is there any other discussion from my board members on this? Hearing none, we will vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. Thank you,
Heather,
PM, for your participation in the call. And Heather will keep you informed on the proceedings.
Okay, I have. Thank you. I'd like to make. Heather?
PM is done, so yeah, we're all.
Could I make.
And voted Heather? On. There's no more discussion today. Thank you. If you have questions or concerns, you can direct those to Heather at the board office.
And it can be added to the file because.
Okay.
Hi, this is Dr. Lana. I can't hear anything. It's breaking up.
Can you hear now?
Yes, clearly now.
Okay, so what did you miss, Dr. Lana? Did you have a question?
No, I voted to move this forward.
All right.
After that.
The motion passed. It has been moved to an informal interview. Did you get that?
Okay,
thanks.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's move.
Heather?
Who's speaking, please?
This is PM.
Oh, I'm sorry. She will contact you because the motion was passed. So
okay.
If you have questions, please call Heather at the board office.
Okay. And I can add something. Because what they said about the COVID, my husband and I didn't even need masks when we went in.
Excuse me, this matter is closed. You need to stop speaking on it. Thank you.
All right. Just call
Thank you.
The board office and Heather will take care of you there. Thank you.
Okay, I will talk to Heather. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All righty, let's go back and vote on, look at our minutes. This is four. From the February 9th, 2020 general session board meeting minutes. Does anyone have any additions, corrections that they'd like to see made to the minutes?
No.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll go ahead and make a motion to accept our general session board meeting minutes from the meeting of February 9th, 2022.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Dr. Ilano. All opposed? So moved. All right. Let's move to, we have an initial analysis. So this is letter C under, from Catherine Miller is the name of the individual that we're going to be discussing. So do you want to do a summary, Heather, or would you like me?
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. I can provide a summary. So this was received by the board office via email on January 18th, 2022 from an individual claiming that Catherine Miller is providing podiatric services and that she is charging patients on a once-a-month basis. Catherine Miller, she did provide a response, and she indicated that she is a certified nursing assistant, but she is not licensed or certified here in Arizona. She was licensed in Illinois, and that she is trained to provide some foot care and to recognize certain ailments of the feet, and that she is only filing nails, buffing calluses, massaging the foot and the knee, and that if she sees an ailment that she cannot treat, she does refer out to a podiatrist. Catherine Miller was not able to be present at today's meeting, and that concludes my summary. I can answer any questions.
Everybody has had the opportunity to read what the accusations were, and of course the person who did the complaint, it remains anonymous. So I really had wanted to ask this lady some questions, but and she was going to be here, but then she was not then able to appear. So I think probably at this best time is, since we don't have her here, that we could ask Heather to send a cease and desist letter?
Yes.
Okay.
I think if the board feels that, based on her response, that she is engaging, you know, in the practice of podiatry, which I think she is, the board can also refer it to the Board of Nursing, since she is not a certified nurse, licensed certified nurse here in Arizona.
So those are our options. Because it probably should, you know, handled by, because they're the ones who license them, that so that we would just directly, indicate to the nursing board that we heard this is an initial evaluation and feel that this is something that is under their purview and not ours. Dr. Ulano, do you have any comments or concerns that you on this?
No, I think that's appropriate, our actions. And if she's getting paid for this thing, that's not right. And if how would she trim her calluses, with a blade or whatnot? I'd like to know that. But sure. I'd like for her board to be aware of what she's doing.
Yeah, and is she keeping medical records on these people that she says she's seeing, every 6 to 8 weeks? You know, having been licensed in another state does not make you licensed in this state. So, like I said, I think that since we've made the motion and it's passed, so that we'll just transfer this to the nursing board.
Did you vote on the motion?
Oh, thank you. I don't know that we did. So we'll take a vote now on the motion.
And that is, just to clarify, that's to send a cease and desist for the practice of podiatry, and then to refer the information we have to the nursing board.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
All right, so everybody's reheard the motion, so let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moves. Thank you. All right. So now we have our issuance of licenses. We have six applications here. So hang on a second. Let me get everything in order here. So our first applicant is Devin Glazer. This is a license application via Comedy. Everything is in order and complete in the application. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Glazer's application for licensure via Comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next applicant is Stephen Kistner. This is also a application via Comedy, and everything on this application appears to be complete. Does anyone have any questions or concerns with this applicant? Hearing none, then, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Kistner's application for licensure via comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Victor Krall, DPM, also license application via comedy. Everything here also appears to be complete. Does anyone else have any questions or concerns? Then make a motion to accept Dr. Krall's application for licensure via comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Thank you.
Did you hear me? I'm sorry. It's going
no problem.
I put on mute.
Okay. All opposed? Motion passed. Our next applicant is Dr. Mark Lewis. This is via universal recognition. Everything is complete here in his application. Anyone have any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Lewis's application via universal recognition and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next application is Alden Sebeck. This is a regular license application, and he will be completing his residency on June the 30th of this year. So anybody have any questions regarding his application? Righty. So hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Sebeck's application for regular licensure and to issue the license upon successful completion of his residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Taylor Sand. This is a comedy application, and everything here in the application seems to be complete. So hearing nothing in opposition, I will move to accept Dr. Taylor's application for licensure and to distribute the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you very much. You need discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All righty. So next is our executive director's report. Heather.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. In anticipation of the upcoming 2022 renewal cycle, I have ordered postcards, and I did consult with the board chair, and beginning in 2023, postcards will no longer be mailed. Only an email reminder will be sent to all licensees. Additionally, the current database does send out email reminders for renewals as well as CE broker. And there is a big statement on the renewal postcard indicating such. I have an update on our website. I was notified just late last week that we will be migrating to the current Drupal platform for our website. All of the information will remain the same. It will all still be there, but the layout of the website will look a little bit different within the next month. I do have an update on the board's draft rules. The record did close on March 6th, so pursuant to Executive Order 2022-01, on Monday, March 7th, I submitted the draft rules to the governor's office for final approval prior to submitting those draft rules to the governor's regulatory review council. So as soon as I get a response from the governor's office, I will submit them to the governor's regulatory review council, and I will keep the board updated on that. I included a copy of the current budget, and I'm can answer any questions on that. And the complaint log is provided as well, and there have been no new complaints submitted since I sent out materials. And that's my summary, and I can answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions for Heather? Okay. Dr. Yolanda, you have anything for Heather?
Nope. No questions. Thanks, Heather.
Okay. Next is our legislative update and discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. I'm going to go through the bills that have moved or been amended or new bills, if that is okay with the board, instead of going through all of the bills that I went through at the last meeting. So the first bill is Senate Bill 1162 relating to controlled substances. The bill has passed the Senate and is awaiting a third read in the House, so that bill is moving through. Senate Bill 1516-8 relating to health professionals' complaints investigations. There have been a few amendments, but just some technical wording. I have been informed that there will be more amendments to this bill. It has not moved since I last reported to the board. Those amendments still are not on the legislature's website, but I will definitely keep the board apprised on this bill because it does affect the board and having to pay for evaluations, and it affects the complaint process and so forth. The next bill is Senate Bill 1670 relating to the governor. This is a new bill that was dropped, and this requires all state agencies to employ a tribal liaison from a recognized tribe to represent and facilitate communications between each agency and tribal communities. The bill is still in the Senate, has not passed the Senate. House Bill 2070 relating to public meetings and proceedings. This has been amended. Wording was added that requires the board to accommodate seating for the anticipated attendance when feasible. That was the amendment was the wording was added when feasible. So the bill has passed the House and is awaiting a third read in the Senate. House Bill 2371 relating to physical provisions for state agencies. This requires that every state agency accept cash and money orders as payment. This bill is moving and it has passed the House and is waiting a third read in the Senate. House Bill 2412 relating to public meetings and proceedings has been amended. This bill requires a public body to post the minutes and a digital recording, but that language was struck and was replaced with audio or audio visual. And this bill is also moving. It passed the House and is awaiting a third read in the Senate. And that concludes my summary. I'm available to answer any questions.
Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions? Dr. Foreman and I don't have any, so you've had something.
No, I don't have any.
Okay.
Nope, thank you.
All right, our next is summary of current events. Is there any? We have nothing under that category. Our next is call to the public, and we have no remaining public to call. Does anybody have any items they'd like to see on future agenda items? And as always, if you have something that comes up that you'd like to discuss, please contact Heather to have that placed on the next meeting agenda. And our next meeting is April the 13th of 2022. And if there is no more business to transact, I will make a motion to adjourn this meeting at 10:44 a.m. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Yolanda.